Good afternoon and welcome to House Labor and Commerce for January 22nd, 2018. Time is 3:21 and we have three items on our agenda. Let me bring up the agenda. Let's see. Reminder to turn off your cell phones. Members present at the meeting are my Chair Keto, Vice Chair Adam Wool, Representative Knopp, Representative Birch, Representative Josephson, Representative Sullivan Leonard is excused today, and we expect Representative Stutes shortly. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our support staff today are Lori Rowland with the assistance of Brian Glenn, and LIO moderator today is Max Stanley. So thank you guys for being here to help us. Our agenda today, we have three board sunsets and then one bill that we've already heard. The three board sunsets are HB 273, extending the Marijuana Control Board, HB 274, extending the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associate Examiners, and HB 275, extending the Board of Massage Therapists. If I could get my staff, Crystal Kieneman, to come forward. We will bring House Bill 273 before us, extending Marijuana Control Board. And Ms. Kieneman will begin with an introduction of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Crystal Kieneman, staff to Representative Keto. Before we begin with House Bill 273, I also wanted to declare a conflict. My spouse is in the industry, and so I wanted to make sure that that was on the record. For House Bill 273, this bill will extend the termination date for the Marijuana Control Board until June 30th, 2024. This is a six-year extension. Legislative Audit did their annual review of this board. They concluded that it's operating in the best public interest to maintain the board, but there are four recommendations that they came up with, which is why there is a six-year extension. Chris Curtis is here to go into the audit in more depth and to walk you through those audit recommendations, as well as Erica McConnell from the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. She is also here to ask, answer questions from the committee. And so with that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions, Representative Birch?
I had a question just because of the Chairman. We had, I think there's an issue of the federal, I can't remember, they revoked some letter at a federal level and it changed how marijuana is treated federally. And I know that from a state standpoint, there's a changeover in the, I think this was the board that there was a, I think it was maybe Kenai police chief or something was on the board and then he quit and just appointed somebody else. How does the board interact with those type, with federal law, for instance? And I don't know, maybe they're just, it just seems like it'd be a real challenge. I just wonder if maybe you could speak to how the interaction that we have at a state level and the duties and responsibilities of a board member, and then how that lines up, if you will, with federal law. And I'm not that close to it, but I thought maybe we could talk about it.
So, Representative Birch, I think for the record, I'll try and restate what you were referring to. And my understanding is the previous administration implemented what was called the Cole memo for the attorney general that had written the memo that basically said that the federal priorities were not on enforcing the drug situation locally except in the cases of significant crimes. And what has happened is that memo has been withdrawn. I think we will probably want to hear from the department because they would be the ones charged with continuing to implement state statute on what the role between the state and the federal government is. I don't know that my staff has background on that, so maybe when we get to the department, that's a question that can
follow up. I think I've served a number of boards, you know, nonprofits and others, and there's always a question of liability, board liability. And I guess one of the concerns I have is, you know, the good citizens in our state that stand up and want to participate in this board. I'm just trying to understand, you know, what sort of liability do they have? Are we protecting them in that case? And I don't know enough about it to know, but I at some point in time, I'd like to air that out just so I'm personally confident that the people don't end up on this board and then end up having some huge financial, aspect of their life that they didn't anticipate due to some sort of legal issue.
And Representative Birch, I think that if we end up in a situation where the answer is much more involved than maybe we have time for today, we can certainly bring the issue up as its own issue.
Great. Thank you.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to mention that the former chair of the ABC board is a police chief in the community in my district. And so when the Cole memorandum was revoked and it looked, we didn't quite know what the federal government was going to do. As far as that, I think that was his, between other frustrations and that, but that his first duty as a police officer, I think, is what swayed him to step aside because of that. So just to let you know on that. I'm not speaking for him, but I think that was part of his decision-making there.
Thank you, Representative Knopp. Any other questions for Ms. Kienemann?
And, Mr. Chairman, I did want to mention that Brandon Emmett is also on the board. He is online to testify, and he does have industry connections, so he may be able, not only from the board perspective, but also from somebody in the industry, he might be able to answer some of the questions that Representative Birch had.
Okay, and thank you, Ms. Kienemann. If we can have Ms. Curtis come forward next. Thank you, Chris. If you can put your name and position on the record and begin your testimony.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor. You should have in your meeting packet a copy of the Sunset Review. The purpose of the Sunset is to determine whether the board is serving the public's interest and whether it should be extended. As this is a new board that was created as the result of the 2014 ballot measure, we do have some background information on page 3, and report conclusions begin on page 5. Overall, this audit found that the board is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing marijuana establishments and developing and adopting regulations. We are recommending a 6-year extension. The audit is fairly positive overall. The board did meet its statutory mandate to develop regulations by November 2015. Those significant regulations included requirements for the issuance, renewal, suspension, and revocation of registrants. Are registrations to operate marijuana establishments. They also established qualifications for those registrations and a schedule of fees. To help evaluate this board's effectiveness, we decided to send out a survey to licensees and another survey to local governments. We sent out a survey to 101 licensees, and we had a 70% response rate. And we sent out a survey to 16 governments and local governments, and we had an 88% response rate. So those questions and the responses are in appendices B and C of the audit. 100% of local government survey respondents and 75% of licensee survey respondents rated the board's overall effectiveness at serving the public's interest as effective or very effective. Additionally, 93% of local government survey respondents rated the board's effectiveness at enforcing marijuana laws in their area as good or excellent. Exhibit 2 on page 8 shows that the board issued 122 licenses from July 2016 through April of 2017. 80% of licensee survey respondents rated their overall license experience as good or excellent. So overall, very positive response. On page 8, we explain that the FY17 operating budget included intent language that stated that the application and licensing fees should cover the cost of regulation and recover the general funds expended to establish the program. So we did some review on that and found that management of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, which we call AMCO, that AMCO management did have procedures in place to track the revenue and the expenditures. However, they stated it was too early in the process to determine whether the revenues were going to cover the cost of regulation. However, they did expect to be fully funded by application and licensing fees by FY20. And Exhibit 3 on page 9 does present a schedule of your licensing fees. There are four recommendations which begin on page 11. The first recommendation is for the board, the director of AMCO, and the enforcement supervisor to develop a enforcement plan. The audit identified that the enforcement section of AMCO is operating without a plan. The director and the board chair did not consider the need or importance of the plan. And this was needed to help help guide the allocation of their limited enforcement resources. We believe a plan is needed to help provide a basis for prioritizing their enforcement resources, and without such a plan, we believe that there is a risk that they may not be adequately protecting the public. Recommendation number 2 is for the board and the AMCO director to implement a process to track and monitor all complaints received to ensure they're assessed for follow-up action and investigated timely. Under the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, there was a process to log all complaints. However, when the office absorbed the responsibility for regulating marijuana, staff responsibilities were realigned, and the log for tracking complaints was not as high a priority as other responsibilities that the office was dealing with, so they stopped logging those complaints. By not tracking complaints, though, there is an increased risk that board staff may not be following up complaints timely or may not be investigating them. Recommendation number 3, page 12, is for the AMCO director to develop written procedures for establishing the expiration dates for the marijuana handler permits. We tested 53 marijuana handler permits and found 47 had inaccurate expiration dates. And this is this error occurred due to a lack of written procedures and insufficient training. We believe this is an easy fix. And then finally on page 13 is recommendation number 4, is for the AMCO director to segregate the duties for calculating and remitting application fees to local governments. When the office receives an application, either a renewal or an initial application, they're required to copy that, send it immediately to the local area in which the applicant wants to operate in. They also are required to send, remit back to that local government half of the application fee. So we reviewed this process and we found that there was just one employee responsible for calculating those fees. It wasn't reviewed, and they were also responsible for approving the payments out. So again, an easy fix to segregate those duties. The department's response is on page 33, and the board's response is on page 35. Both the board and the department agreed with all four recommendations.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. And I think, you know, as a follow-up to what Representative Birch had indicated, I don't think the Cole memo withdrawal had been done by the time you were working on the completion of the report. Do you have any way to speculate on whether or not that decision by the federal government would have any impact on the efficacy or the applicability of our Marijuana Control Board?
Chair Keto, that was outside the scope of the review. Okay. We were in there doing testing on licenses September, October, so didn't contemplate that type of activity happening when we were organizing the audit.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Curtis? Seeing no questions, thank you, Ms. Curtis. And we do have Erica McConnell with the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. Ms. McConnell, if you can put your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Erica McConnell. I'm the Director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, and I have no particular testimony but would be happy to answer questions.
Any questions for Ms. McConnell? Representative Birch.
How are you doing on the marijuana tasting rooms?
Through the chair. Birch. There is an open regulations project to develop regulations regarding on-site consumption. It was last before the board at the November meeting, November of 2017. Mm-hmm. It had been out for public comment. We got over 500 pages of public comment at that time, but there were a number of issues that were identified as still needing to be worked out through the regulations. So what the board did was sent it to a subcommittee of the board to work out the issues that had been identified and bring a new proposal back to the board at their April meeting. So that subcommittee has had one meeting so far, and we're making progress. So we'll have a new proposal for the board in April.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Any Representative Justison?
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. McConnell, good to see you. We exchanged some correspondence about a break-in that occurred 2 weeks ago in Anchorage and resulted in a loss of, I guess, over $100,000 of assets. And according to the media, the entire burglary took like 65 seconds or something. I don't know how that's possible. But Mr. Peterson of the Assembly, the Anchorage Assembly, asked me to investigate whether it was necessary to show the floor plan of the business online. And I know you've responded to that email, but is there something more that you'd like to share with the committee about that issue?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, we, you know, are also concerned about the security of our licensees, and we've taken two steps. One step we were taking before that particular break-in, and one we have taken afterwards. One is to revise our application forms so that the form that shows the diagram of the licensed premises instructs applicants to no longer show where they're placing their security cameras or the location of any other type of security apparatus, such as panic buttons, so that anybody who is looking at those will no longer know the location of those types of things. The other step that we are taking is trying to find that balance between public access to information that is coming before the board and the security concerns of the licensees. So while we still plan to have the licensed premises diagram available for review before a licensee is approved by the board, at such time as the board takes action on the license, we are then going back and removing the diagram of the licensed premises from our website so that it isn't there at once the facility starts operating.
Okay.
Thank you. Follow-up?
On a separate and sort of broader scale or question, when the referendum or the initiative passed in August 2014, I think, was the month, the legislature in January of 2015 had, both chambers had a number of bills looking at every possible issue under the sun relating to this industry. In the end, we didn't pass all of them or hardly any of them. We passed a board bill. There was there was legislation on the number of plants per household that passed. But mostly it's been a hands-off approach. And I guess my question is that working? Or, I mean, my sense is that it is. I don't want to be on that board because they must work all the time. But do you have any opinion about whether greater guidance is needed?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I have found working with the Marijuana Control Board that they have been very responsive through the regulatory process to address issues that we have found in our review and raised with them. I think your question might be better directed to the board to see whether they feel that they have the support or the support that they need. And I know that board member Brandon Emmett is on the phone.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from Ms. Connell? Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, Director McConnell, thanks for coming in. There's a section here about tracking complaints. Mm-hmm. Do you only investigate complaints that come in, or do you investigate just on your own volition, I guess, is the question.
Through the chair, Representative Wolf, in general, we only investigate on a complaint basis. There's plenty of work to do with inspections and things like that lead us to only investigate based on complaints. If I know one of the audit items was setting enforcement priorities, and something that's been kind of a undocumented priority is trying to get into each licensed premises at least once a year. If there is an enforcement officer who goes into a licensed premises and finds an issue, then there may be an investigation that does come about that isn't about a complaint. But we're not, in general, going out and looking for problems.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess things like stings that maybe on the alcohol enforcement side have been practiced in the past, you aren't doing that in the marijuana industry, like intentionally trying to get people to break the rules, that kind of thing.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, on the alcohol side, there used to be two programs, the compliance check program and the shoulder tap program. And we are working on resurrecting those programs, and we would also apply them to the marijuana side. The compliance check is where people who are underage go into a facility and try to purchase the regulated product. And a shoulder tap is where somebody who is underage stands outside of the facility and taps someone on the shoulder and tries to get them to go in, you know, someone who is over 21 and tries to get them to purchase. We feel that, and we're working with the alcohol board on this, but that's an important way to enforce our laws on these regulated substances. But those would be the only things that I think would address your question.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how much of an issue is workload? And I know when the board is being created, there was a lot of discussion about should there be two separate offices, two separate boards, two separate staffs. And at the time, it was decided that the one existing office could incorporate marijuana. And I know you've only been director for a short amount of time, so to the best of your limited ability, or not limited ability, but temporarily limited ability, do you feel like that it's taxing the staff, especially on the enforcement side, where you have a certain number of, and I know you've added some, but is it a lot to ask for this particular staff to enforce alcohol and marijuana, especially a new, growing and brand new industry? Is the workload too much?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, personally, I think it makes a lot of sense to have these two substances regulated through the same office. There are a lot of similarities between the two in terms of the processes that we have set up. We're all extremely busy, and so I'm not going to tell you that we couldn't use more people, but I'm not going to ask for more people either. I think we're managing.
Okay. Last follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my comment on the previous question was, at the time I thought it would be good to have them under the same, but sometimes now I question that as well. But not that you are, but I am. There was an infraction in a business in Fairbanks, and I don't know if it was a complaint or somehow it was discovered there was some the labeling wasn't accurate with the product that was being sold, and the business was fined $500,000. Is that from a schedule or table of fines, or is that arbitrary? It seems to the layman a high fine, especially for a brand new business. That's the I want you out of business fine, unless that's something that you throw out there to then negotiate down. Just a $500,000 fine seems large. So I didn't know if that was like a complaint that you followed up on, or was that a self-generated issue that you guys discovered? And the table, is that a table of fines that you're going from? Or
through the chair, Representative Wool, that situation went far beyond just a labeling issue. That was a product manufacturing facility that was not testing the vast majority of the products that they were selling, which is a major requirement. That's a major health and safety issue. So it was a big deal. I brought an we did get a I don't want to say a complaint, but we got a tip that we followed up on, sure, which led to the discovery that that they were not testing their products as required, that they were not tracking their products as required. And I did write an accusation, which is what I'm supposed to do through the regulations, and brought it to the board for consideration. My accusation did recommend that their license be revoked, but it did not have a fine. So the fine, it didn't have a fine proposed. The board felt that a fine was important. The fine, there isn't exactly a table, but there's a proposal that the first violation be a certain amount, and the second violation be a certain amount, and the third violation be a certain amount, or three times the profit made by the licensee due to the violation. And the board evaluated that this facility had made significantly over $1 million, and they felt that because of the egregious nature of the violation, they felt that a high fine was warranted.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Director McConnell, one of the other items in our bill packet is a fiscal note, and as expected, there are a large amount of the fiscal impact from the control board is paid for with designated general funds, but there is a small amount in the fiscal note identified $532,000 or $532,800. Can you describe to me the necessity of having that additional general fund and why that was not designated?
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that when this the control board and the office, or the half of the office, the program was first created, you know, there is a requirement that it be funded by the licensees, but of course you can't get the first couple people to pay for an entire staff. So in FY16 and 17, we were funded by unrestricted general funds with the understanding that we would have less in FY18, less in FY19, and then be entirely self-supported in fiscal year 2020. So the FY19 request has a general fund allocation of approximately half of what we're getting this year in FY18, so it's part of our kind of weaning off of the general fund. And it's very important to maintain this scheme because the industry is still getting set up. It is still it needs a couple of years to kind of figure out how many licenses the market can bear, how many licenses will be sustained over time, so that we have an expectation of how much income that the office will have to support the needs of the regulated industry. And so it is important to maintain this plan.
Thank you. And so I guess it's just a recognition that there's a transition from the board startup to regular board operation.
Mr. Chair, yes, that is an excellent way to describe it.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Burke, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just had a, through the chair, I had a question on the, I understand there's a lot of cash moving around. That, you know, so when you have a $5,000 license fee or something that, that because the banks have some reluctance to be engaged, at least with some of the operators, due to the nature of the business and the federal law that they operate under, do you deal with a lot of cash? I mean, do people pay their $5,000 annual license fee? Do they come in with a fistful of cash? Or, how does that work? Or do they give you – I'm kind of curious about the mechanics of moving what's obviously a pretty good-sized amount of money, how that kind of moves around within the context of your operation. Through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Birch, we actually don't take in a great deal of cash. We find that most people bring us their fees in either checks or cashier's checks.
Okay.
They do have the ability. There's a secure room in the parking garage just across the street from the Atwood Building in Anchorage, and I know a lot of tax payments are made in cash, and they are made at that secure room. But in terms of our office, no, we don't handle a great deal of cash.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Representative Knott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Erica, I'm curious about your shoulder tap program. Mm-hmm. So, who do you hold accountable? The tappee or the store owner? Or, I mean, how do you hold a facility accountable for somebody who's really allowed to purchase, not knowing that they're purchasing for an underage? So, how's the shoulder tap program work?
Through the chair, Representative Knopf, every store has to have a security person at the front entrance to ensure that nobody under 21 is getting in. And in that kind of context, a shoulder tap type of program is a little challenging because somebody has to notice that the person who's 21 that purchases the marijuana goes outside and gives it to somebody who appears to be underage. We actually did hear about this happening once in Anchorage, but we were unable to, and one of my enforcement officers did go out and try to find the people, both the purchaser and the young person who was given the marijuana, but they had disappeared by that time. I think it has to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. I mean, if the security person in the retail store clearly can see the situation, then it very well might be that, you know, we do hold them responsible. But if it's something that somebody notices it's happening a block away where they really couldn't have known, then, you know, what's reasonable? So I think we try to address each situation on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Director McConnell?
Yes.
Just Representative Justice.
Thank you. Through the chair. Director, I've noticed in Anchorage there's just a it seems like there are dozens of retail operations. And you touched on this a little bit, but are the number of licensees determined by the municipality or by the board? It just strikes me that I'm just curious how they're all profitable. But maybe there's that demand. I don't know.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, there is no limit on the number of state licenses issued. Local governments have the ability to set a limit for themselves. To my knowledge, the municipality of Anchorage has not done so, but they could if they wish to.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Director McConnell. And next up, we have Brandon Emmett from the Marijuana Control Board. Mr. Emmett, can you place your name and affiliation on the record and provide your testimony for us, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Brandon Emmett. I am an industry seat holding board member on the Marijuana Control Board, and I'm calling in from Fairbanks today.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Well, I am calling today in support of HB 273. I think the Marijuana Control Board has done quite a lot of great work for the state of Alaska. I'd like to see that work continue. We've got quite a bit ahead of us, and I feel that having a functional regulated marijuana industry is much more in line with the needs of the state of Alaska than our previously unregulated system.
Thank you, Mr. Emmett, and thank you for your service. Do we have any questions for Mr. Emmett?
Yes.
Representative Josephson has a question.
Through the chair, Mr. Emmett, the question I asked Ms. McConnell is, put more succinctly, is does the board seek any guidance from the legislature, or are you happy to have a hands-off approach from the legislature?
So currently the board does not have any specific asks of the legislature. There are some issues that I myself, as an individual board member, see that could be addressed by the legislature. But as a body, we do not have any asks at this time.
Thank you. Question from Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. Brandon, there's a few surveys here in front of us that I look at them sort of as a group: overall licensing experience, overall renewal experience, overall board effectiveness. Each of these has about 20% that say poor, and not at all effective. And the existence of occupational barriers, there was a yes of 52%. Do any of these survey responses concern you as a board member? That I understand you're a new board and there's probably some growing pains, but do any of these responses overall concern you? I realize the number of respondents is low, but it's for licensees, so, or applicants. So I guess that's my question.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Wohl. I believe a lot of those complaints that came in were at the board's outset. There were some significant barriers to entry, mostly financial barriers that made it sort of a pay-to-play system. I think that Some people found it difficult to enter into the industry. I think that as the industry matures, that the number of complaints and people feeling that it's difficult to get in will decrease, because the industry will start to sort of reach an equilibrium as far as the number of applicants go. But I think overall the process has been relatively smooth if we compare our process to those in other states.
I'll follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'll ask you a similar question that I asked Director McConnell, which is, do you feel that the merging of the alcohol and marijuana boards into a central office with a central enforcement staff, do you think that's ineffective? Do you think there's enough similarity between those two industries to make that a symbiotic or a good relationship, or do you find them more divergent?
I feel that the marijuana industry is similar to the alcohol industry. It does have some subtle differences in the product, the consumer base. I think that the greatest challenge with the merging of the offices has just been in total resources. I think that I can speak for the board when I say that we feel that our staff is been stretched to the limit. You can see it on their faces at the board meetings that these people have been working extremely hard with very limited resources. And the board has requested more resources. I know that Alaska is experiencing a trying a time right now, that our economy is not quite where we would like it to be, and that everyone's got to dig deep. But I feel that if the resources were there, that an expansion of the office and potentially separate offices would be applicable.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Emmett, and thank you for your service to the state. We do have Sarah Chambers, the Deputy Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing online for questions. Does anyone have questions for Ms. Chambers? And I actually will restate, Ms. Chambers, if you have an opportunity or something to say regarding the question that Representative Birch had asked earlier about the role between the federal government and the state in regard to the Cole memo, or if it's a question that we might need to pursue further at a later date, could you respond to that, please?
She's right there.
Oh, there she is. I was looking for you online. Ms. Chambers, can you come forward, please?
Looking for you online.
Thank you and welcome. I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. And while I was in the acting position of Director of AMCO last year, I'm with a different division now, and apologize for any confusion in signing up to testify. I'm here for massage therapy and psychology.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Chambers.
Thank you.
I think at this point we will move forward to public testimony. If everyone's ready, we'll go ahead and open up public testimony at 3:59 p.m. We have been, note for the record that we have been joined by Representative Stutes. Thank you. So we are at public testimony, and I am going to go, let's see. Online, we have Jaina Weltson from Anchorage.
Thank you, Jaina. Yes, thank you. This is Jaina Weltson in Anchorage.
Okay.
And I just wanted to call in and
provide your affiliation and then provide your testimony, please.
Sure. My affiliation is I'm the owner of JDW Counsel. It's a law firm that services probably about 40% of this state's marijuana licenses. We've also represented clients that are marijuana licensee holders in Washington, Oregon, Arizona, and Nevada. And I just wanted to voice my support of this bill. The Marijuana Control Board has worked really, really hard to create a structure for this industry, and it's evolving, and it's not, the work's not done. But I will say that Director McConnell has done a really good job, you know, getting this office in a very efficient manner and getting it moving in the right direction and helping out licensees. You know, I know resources are always an issue, so I won't say that they need more resources, but I'm sure you can probably gather that more resources are always good. Yeah, and I just wanted to voice my support for the renewal of the control board.
Thank you, Ms. Waltzien. Any questions for Ms. Waltzien? Thank you for your testimony, and we will move on to Leah Leventon in Anchorage. Ms. Leventon, if you can put your name and affiliation on the record and provide your testimony.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
My name is good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Leah Leventon. I'm in Anchorage, and I am calling in support of this bill, HB 273. I am currently a marijuana retail license holder in Anchorage. I represent Enlighten Alaska, and we were one of the first retail licenses that were granted a retail license in the state. The licensing process was really involved. And as a company, I feel we learned quite a bit alongside the Marijuana Control Board and the diligent and hard work of Director McConnell. So we firmly believe in the continued existence of the Marijuana Control Board, and we believe it's so important. We support this bill 100%. Without the continued support of the Marijuana Control Board, really the development and progress of the responsible regulation of this new industry could potentially be stifled. They will help keep the industry really consistent. It's really critical that the Marijuana Control Board regulate this new industry, and we keep that consistency moving forward. They've operated really professionally thus far. I feel definitely in the public's interest. Enforcement's been adequate. I will say I personally feel, from what I've seen, the AMCO office could certainly use additional staff. We do appreciate the legislature's effort in allocating additional resources, those six extra positions, because without those staff members, this industry really wouldn't move forward as it has. So I'm in support of this bill, and we appreciate your consideration to extend the termination date to 2024.
Thank you, Ms. Leventon. Any questions for Ms. Leventon? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. The next person we have for public testimony is Bruce Schulte. Mr. Schulte, if you can place your name and affiliation on the record, provide your testimony, and I do want to start by saying thank you for your service to the Marijuana Control Board, and go ahead and place your name on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bruce Schulte. I'm speaking today as a spokesman for the campaign to regulate marijuana. I'm calling from Anchorage. I do want to call in support of this bill. I'm extending the authorization of the Marijuana Control Board for six more years. I think, you know, having served on the board, I've seen the work firsthand. I think they've done important work and good work, and I would, you know, echo the comment you've already heard, praising the staff for all their good work. I did want to draw attention to one item, though, and this was discussed earlier. There was reference to some recommendations that the commissioner had offered as that might make the AMCO office more effective. And one of those had to do with establishing enforcement priorities. And I wanted to focus on that a little bit because I think that is hugely important, in fact, perhaps even imperative. What's happened, you know, this has been an evolution. It's been new industry, a new process to a lot of people. But in some cases, we've seen enforcement staff go out and enforce not just regulation, not just statute, but also their subjective interpretation of what the regulation should be. The first two I support wholeheartedly. The latter one gets awkward because I think these licensees have gone through tremendous effort and expense to become legitimate businesses, and for them to be subject to subjective interpretation of regulations, I think is at least unfair and at worst a misapplication of law. So to bring this back to an earlier discussion about whether or not the legislature should weigh in on this, I would hope that they would not have to, but I would suggest that if the AMCO office can't or is unable to arrive at some very specific limitations on the enforcement staff, then perhaps the legislature should step in, because I think their role in that case would be to protect due process, to protect these licensees from abuse by the enforcement staff. Hopefully that's the worst case, but I do think that that needs to be looked at very closely.
Thank you, Mr. Schulte, we do have a question from Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Schulte, I appreciate your testimony, but to make it especially useful to me, you'd have to give me an illustration of what you're talking about.
Okay, sure. Fair enough. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, there was an incident just about a year ago where the board met on a Thursday and Friday. They received input from staff, including enforcement. Nothing was said about CBD oil on the shelves of these retail stores. The following Monday, a number of stores around the state were raided, product confiscated, and this was done on an interpretation of regulation, the absence or presence of, you know, CBD products. You know, as it turns out, you know, many of the products on these shelves were identical to products that were carried on, you know, other retailer shelves, like Natural Pantry, for example. Now, the whole discussion about CBD oil is a valid one. It's an appropriate one. But I think it could have been handled differently. I think it would have been appropriate for staff to have said at the Marijuana Control Board meeting, hey, we've got this concern. Here's how we think we should handle it. What do you guys think as a board? And by the way, industry licensees who are listening in or watching, you know, this is an issue. None of that happened. Instead, they just went the following week and started confiscating products. Now, several months later, the head of enforcement was before the board and said, you know, we need guidance on this. There are areas where we're not sure what to do. We need the board to tell us how to respond in that situation. And there was some discussion, but there was no, I mean, there was no motions made. There was no commitment on the part of the board other than the board chair saying, yeah, just go ahead and continue exercising your best judgment. Well, that sounds good, but exercising one's best judgment in the enforcement where they essentially have law enforcement authority, but they're not bound by the same levels of due process that law enforcement would be, that concerned me, and that was very troubling to watch.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Schulte? Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Schulte, I guess following that same line of questioning, and I know you served on the marijuana board for a period of time, and I sort of asked the same question of Mr. Emmett as well, but as far as the enforcement staff, that maybe some of them existed already before marijuana came online, and maybe some were hired afterwards. Do you find that the dual enforcement responsibilities of the enforcement staff is a good thing, or is it two separate areas? And do you find that they maybe were a whole bunch of new stuff was thrown at them, and maybe that's what you're alluding to?
Thank you for that. Through the chair, Representative Wohl, it's a great question. I would echo to a certain extent Mr. Emmett's comments that in these economic times, I guess it makes sense to me to keep things as lean as possible. I think if we were to, if and when we move beyond that and the state can afford it, I do think it would be better to have the two offices separate. But to be fair, you know, it's an economical and efficient way to handle these two industries. There are a lot of similarities, certainly, and yes, there are some people who are new to the process, and again, you know, they're stretched thin. I get that, so I don't want people to think I'm just, you know, trying to run them down unfairly. You know, both the licensing staff, the office staff, and the enforcement staff, they are stretched thin, and I understand that. And so I think, yes, to answer your question in a rather roundabout way, down the road, yes, I think it would be helpful to have the two board, the two industries in, regulated separately. For now, I think it can be managed, but again, I do think that, that some sideboards need to be put on some of this activity, in part so that the staff is not spending their limited resources enforcing things that maybe aren't an issue yet.
Thank you, Mr. Schulte.
Thank you.
A follow-up?
No.
Thank you for testimony, Mr. Schulte. That concludes all the people we had signed up for public testimony. So what we're going to do is leave public testimony open and set this bill aside, and we will be considering this bill at a later meeting. So at this point, we will move on to House Bill 274, extending the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associate Examiners. And Ms. Kieneman, if, or Ms. Ellis, if you can come forward. My staff, Caitlin Ellis, is going to carry this bill, and so if you could provide us with that, state your name and affiliation for the record and provide us with the opening statement on the bill.
Good afternoon, committee members and Chair Quito. My name is Caitlin Ellis, staff to Representative Quito, presenting House Bill 274. It is a simple bill. All it does is extend the board of psychologists and sociological associate examiners for 8 years. That's the full statutory extension allowed. So that's the highest recommendation, basically, from legislative audit. The board was established to regulate the practice of psychology in Alaska. It's composed of five members. Three licensed psychologists, one licensed psychological associate, and one public member who does not have a financial interest in the healthcare industry. As of March 2017, the board regulated 285 licensees. Without the board, it would sunset June 30th of this year, and then would have 1 year to conclude and wrap up its administrative operations before it would be the responsibility would be back to the division. It's pretty much all the bill does. We have Chris Curtis here again to talk about the audit. The chair of the board, Alan Levy, is online to testify, as is Robert Lane, a member of the Alaska Psychological Association, who are here for questions. Any questions from the committee?
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Ellis? No. Thank you for introducing the bill, and we'll bring Ms. Curtis forward from Legislative Audit Department to provide us with a review of the legislative audit.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, State Legislative Auditor. You should have a copy of the audit in your packets. It should be dated October 2017. Mm-hmm. Overall, we found that this board is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating psychologists and psychological associates. We recommend the maximum allowed term allowed for in statute, which is 8 years. Information you may find useful in the report. Page 5 shows the licensing activity. 285 active licenses as of March 2017, and this represents 174% increase since the prior sunset audit in 2009. Schedule of revenues and expenditures is on page 7. The board had a surplus of almost $400,000 at the end of FY17. We did note that the board, in conjunction with DCBPL, did increase fees for FY17 despite the surplus. The fee levels are shown on page 6. The audit had two recommendations. The first is on page 9, and that is for the board and the division to work together to reduce licensing fees. The intent of the fee increase was to have the psychologists and psychological associates pay the same fee level. Unfortunately, they didn't consider the surplus at that time, and as a result, licensees are paying a too high, a higher than justified fee level. Recommendation number 2 is on page 10. We recommend DCBPL's director implement procedures to ensure courtesy licensees comply with reporting requirements. Courtesy licensees are restricted to practice no more than 30 days in a calendar year. They're required to submit monthly reports to monitor and track those requirements, and due to turnover in licensing staff and a lack of procedures, the reporting requirement was not enforced. The response to the audit, the department's response is on page 21, and the board's response is on page 23. Both the board and the department agreed with the recommendations.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from Ms. Curtis? Not seeing any questions. Thank you. Representative Wohl has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Quito. Mr. Curtis, I guess I'm just looking at the fee schedule on page 6, where it's $75, $75, $75, and then up to $200. And your recommendation is that jump was too much, despite the fact they had a surplus. And I'm still unclear as what their justification is for more than, I mean, I guess about tripling the rate. You're saying to keep the two applicants in could you run that by me again? Just seems like a big jump out of nowhere. Now you're saying jump back down, I guess.
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, the intent was to have the licensing fee for the psychologists and psychological associates to be the same level. The thought being that it takes the same, it's my understanding the thought was it takes the same amount of resources to process both of those licenses, so it would make sense to have them at the same level. The problem came into instead of reducing one and increasing the other, so one was reduced to address the surplus, they just increased the associate's fee. So it's just a simple oversight and not considering that surplus, and as a result, you have licensees paying too high a fee.
Okay. Thank you. I didn't see all the other. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Next up, we have Alan Levy, the chair of the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associate Examiners. Mr. Levy, if you could place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
Yes, this is Alan Levy. I'm a licensed psychological associate. I am also currently serving on the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associate Licensing Examiners. I'm in the second year of my second term on the board. I've been serving since 2012. I'm the current board chair. I just want to keep my remarks brief. I agree with the sunset audit. I believe that we are acting in the public interest and doing a good job of regulating the practice of psychology in the state of Alaska and protecting the public and assuring an adequate supply of licensed professionals. We've already taken steps to implement the two recommendations in the sunset audit as far as tracking courtesy licenses, and we expect to see a significant fee decrease at the next renewal period for license fees starting in 2019, which is the earliest given the procedures that need to be done to come to an accurate license fee. We spoke with Director Hovenden at our last meeting about this, and because they have a backlog of other boards and so on that need fee reviews, that's the soonest we could get it done anyway. I don't have any other remarks prepared other than that I do support the continued existence of our board. I think we provide a necessary and useful function, and the legislative audit that was conducted, I believe, was fair and very very effective and accurate in their conclusions.
Thank you, Mr. Levy. Any questions? Thank you for your testimony. And next up, we have Robert Lane with the Alaska Psychological Association. Dr. Lane, if you could put your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
Certainly. My name is Dr. Robert Lane. I'm a psychologist here in Alaska. I'm also a professor at Alaska Pacific University in one of the doctoral programs here in Alaska and affiliated with the Alaska Psychological Association, working in their legislative committee. I would like to testify today in favor and support of House Bill 274. I think it provides regulations for guiding our practice, which provides for safety for the public. As an educator, it helps provide regulations that helps guide our educational programs. It also keeps us on par with all the other states in the union who have licensed psychologists. So we're certainly in favor of extending the board to 2026. We are working on, I'm not authorized to actually present this, but I think the Alaska Psychological Association is certainly working on a letter of support, and the committee should expect that forthwith.
Thank you, Mr. Lane. Any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony, Dr. Lane. I will, at this point, open up public testimony. We do not have anybody signed up for public testimony, but I will open it up for anybody in the room that is interested to testify. Seeing no one, I will leave public testimony open. We will set House Bill 274 aside, and we will move on to House Bill 275. So thank you, everyone who was here for that bill. House Bill 275, extending the Board of Massage Therapists, is now before the committee, and my staff, Crystal Kieneman, will provide the introduction of the bill. Crystal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Crystal Kieneman, staff to Representative Quito. House Bill 275 will extend the termination date for the Board of Massage Therapists until June 30th, 2022. This is a four-year extension as recommended by legislative audit. Again, Chris Curtis is here to go into the audit in more detail. There were three audit recommendations that they identified during the course of their audit. The Board of Massage Therapists is still a new board. They're still going through growing pains and learning their way through the process. But legislative audit feels that it is in the best interest to maintain the board. The board currently oversees about 1,400 licensees, which is well, almost double of what they had anticipated upon initial licensure when they first were created. The board is made up of five members. Four of the board positions are to be filled by licensed massage therapists actively engaged in the process of massage therapy for a period of 3 years immediately preceding their appointment. The remaining position is to be filled by an individual of the general public. And Mr. Chairman, with that, I'm available for questions. Or Ledge Audit is here, as well as Sarah Chambers from the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing.
Thank you, Ms. Kieneman. Questions for Ms. Kieneman? Thank you, and we'll bring Chris Curtis up one more time for yet another board. You can place your name and affiliation on the record and provide your testimony, please.
Hello, my name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor. You should have a copy of the audit in front of you. Again, this one is also dated October 2017. And as Crystal mentioned, this is a new board. It was created in 2015, and this is its first sunset review. We do have some background information regarding establishing the board. That begins on page 3. The audit found that the board is serving the public's interests in all areas except licensing. We found that, in general, the meetings were conducted effectively, investigations were appropriately processed, and the board actively issued or changed regulations to improve the industry. In regards to licensing, the audit found that applicants were not consistently issued licenses in accordance with statutes, regulations, and procedures. Additionally, we found an FBI audit was conducted, and they found that improvements were needed to comply with the federal standards over criminal history record information that's obtained as part of the licensing process. We are recommending the legislature extend this board 4 years. Information you may find useful. Page 11 is the schedule of licensing activity. From FY16 through August of 2017, the board issued 1,186 licenses, and as Crystal mentioned, that is double the 600 that they expected to issue. Schedule of revenues and expenditures is on page 14. The board had a surplus of $265,000 at the end of FY17. License fees were lowered in FY18 to address the surplus. And the schedule of licensing fees is on page 15. The audit does have three recommendations. They begin on page 17. And this first is for the DC BPL director, in consultation with the board, to improve procedures to ensure that licensure requirements are met. We tested 31 license applications, and we found three errors, and they're listed on page 17. The first is a background check report that it was not obtained as part of the original licensing process. What happened was there was some problems with the fingerprint card. It went back and forth, and then it was just an oversight and not included on their tracking worksheet, and just the ball was dropped. It was obtained as part of the renewal, but for that original application process, it wasn't obtained. The second issue was an applicant had marked yes on a professional fitness question, and there was no evidence of follow-up to show that information regarding that yes answer was obtained and considered as part of the licensure requirements. And the background information does describe describe the application and the types of professional fitness questions that are asked, such as have you been convicted of a crime, a misdemeanor, a felony, that type of thing. And so we found one that had yes and no follow-up. A third error was that there was a yes answer to a professional fitness question, and staff did obtain that support, and it was that an issue where the applicant's national massage license had been revoked due to a violation of at Code of Ethics and Standards of Practice. And the standard procedures would require that this information be forwarded to investigations for additional review, and that didn't happen. The board ended up approving this license on the condition that a two-hour ethics course was taken. And the basis for that was that there were no convictions as part of the background report. So the background report was obtained, and there was no conviction. So the decision to go ahead and license was made, but the procedure was to do a little bit more work, and that's where we have an issue with this and called it an error. So taken together, we believe that there is improvements needed with the licensing process. Recommendation number two is on page 10. This is a recommendation for the director of the division to work with and address the FBI findings. This audit was conducted in April 2017, and they found that a few problems. One was an unsecured website was used to route confidential criminal history information that's obtained as part of the license process. Additionally, applicants were not notified in writing that their fingerprints were to be used for an FBI background check. It's probably a technicality, since I'm assuming they would know that when they're giving their fingerprints, but it is a requirement. Additionally, they're not informed that how to change, correct, or update record information for the FBI. More troubling is they found inadequate chain of custody over the fingerprint cards. So this was came out in April 2017. We were there in October 2017, and we noted that the division had addressed the application language to communicate that these fingerprints would be used for a background check, but the other findings had not been addressed. So we included a recommendation to address the findings. And then rec number three is on page 19. Recommend the Office of the Governor, Boards and Commissions, staff work to help fill that public member position. It became vacant in March. It was still vacant when we were there in October. And what we found is per statute that public member may not be a licensed healthcare provider, may not be an employee of the state, and may not be a current or former member of another occupational licensing board. So according to the director of the Boards and Commissions, these type of restrictive requirements make it difficult to find interested applicants. So the department's response is on the Office of the Governor response is on page 29. They agree to help work to fill that public member position, and they communicate that they are recommending that the board pursue a legislative fix to those restrictive requirements. The department response is on page 31. The department agrees that additional checks are needed to ensure that the administrative record is complete in order to support the licensing process. However, they do note that are going to need some additional supervisory resources to help meet that standard. And then in regards to the FBI audit finding, they do note they consider this new information, that the FBI does these reviews every 3 years, and they had not identified these problems in the past. So they believe they are quickly responding to these findings. And then the board's response is on page 33, and the board agrees with the conclusions and the recommendations.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Any questions, Representative Josephson?
Yeah, something occurs to me, and I, through the chair, I don't quite know why I haven't asked it over the years, but Where are all these, you're talking about these cards with the fingerprints and documents and license applications, where's all of this housed? I mean, the board doesn't have its own office. Is it housed with the department and then at the time of a meeting it's brought out? Or where's all this kept? The paper, the documents.
Representative Justin, through the chair, the chain of custody specifically with this audit had to do with an applicant was going to a certified person to get their fingerprints, and then the card was given back to the applicant, who then mailed it in. So that's problematic. You could tamper with the cards. It's my understanding those cards are sent to the FBI. And I don't know if the cards are sent back. That might be a question for the department. My understanding is a background report would be sent back. But I don't know if the cards are sent back, and I don't know to what degree how they're housed.
Follow up. But for all of these boards and commissions, I mean, I can't assume the chairman has a two-car garage and uses half of it to store boxes of documents. That isn't what's happening.
I have to direct that question to the department.
Okay.
It'd be interesting to know the answer.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Curtis?
Yes.
Representative Justison. Representative Wolf.
Thanks, Chair Quito. Let's see. I have a couple questions. Ms. Curtis, so pre-2015 without a board, a massage therapist was not able to bill an insurance company. Does this board enable them to use insurance, and prior to the board, they're not? Is that correct?
Through the chair, it's my understanding that they had to work previous to the board. They had to work through, say, a chiropractor's office or some other healthcare professional in order to bill insurance. But that could be a question for the board chair to confirm that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Follow up?
Yes, please. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the fingerprint issue is a question from me as well. I personally had to submit my fingerprints for a liquor license years ago. I just did it one time, and it's not a recurring thing. My fingers haven't changed, and I my understanding, this is something that has to be done biannually, and is that unusual? It seems like there's a lot of behaviors that are far more risky than this that don't require biannual fingerprinting, and I'll let you answer that one.
Through the chair, I was very surprised to understand that just to what extent this is helpful for combating human trafficking. So I understand that the sex trade industry is a problem, and that regulating and licensing, even I know that there's some interest in regulating and licensing massage establishments to help combat that. But as far as if it's unusual, that would be, I suppose, a question for the department. But to me, it did not seem unusual, or given the nature of the occupation.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess it still seems unusual. For one, I would think anyone who's going to operate illegally as a massage parlor, as a front, using a massage parlor as a front, probably wouldn't submit fingerprints or register if they know they're going to be in that illegal activity. And I guess the same logic about there's a lot of maybe sex trafficking affiliated with this industry. You could argue that, well, there's a lot of crime that uses guns, but you don't have to fingerprint yourself to buy a gun at Fred Meyer. So I don't really understand the need for recurring fingerprints, but maybe the board can answer that better.
Representative Knott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chris, you touched on something there I hadn't thought about. So this licensing process is for individual massage therapists, but you talked about massage
establishments.
What was the word I'm looking for?
Establishment.
Establishments, thank you. So do we currently license massage establishments? And then follow-up question is, you don't have to be a licensed massage therapist to own a massage massage establishment? Is that fair to say? Or?
Through the chair, one thing we saw repeatedly looking at the board meeting minutes and looking at newspaper articles, that type of thing, through the planning phase, was that there is interest from the law enforcement community on that possibly licensing massage establishments possibly being a way to help combat human trafficking. It's my understanding that currently that's not done, and the only thing we note in the report is if there is interest in doing that, it will require a statutory change. And I can't answer. I don't know the answer to your second question.
Okay, thank you. I think what we'll do, if we don't have any other questions from Ms. Curtis, we'll go ahead and bring the department up. Thank you, Ms. Curtis. And we have Sarah Chambers again. I apologize for the other board, but Ms. Chambers, if you can place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with the department's testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing.
So, question, I think we did have a question regarding the establishments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I made a list of some of the questions that were just being asked, including which garage is keeping all the records. To speak to establishments first, however, Representatives Wool and Knopf were mentioning, asking about whether they are currently licensed. No, the establishments are not licensed, and that is of keen interest, as Ms. Curtis mentioned, to law enforcement and to the board. I understand that Representative Keto has a bill that would do just that. And it's sort of the missing link in putting together the enforcement tools that need to happen to combat human trafficking in this industry.
Thank you, Ms. Chambers. And that what Ms. Chambers is referring to is the House Bill 110 that we do have in this committee, and we can bring it back before the committee for further discussion on some of these issues that were actually raised in the audit. So it seems like it might be timely again to have that bill come up again this year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Next on my list is, where are all of these documents kept? And they are kept within our office across the street in the state office building, and they're kept on a secure database. And we do transfer the files that are needed electronically to the board so they can evaluate the things that statutorily they're required to evaluate. We were using a system that we were informed was secure. But upon review by the FBI, they did not agree with our IT. So we've put into place a different system now that is secure, meets all of the state's standards. So that's been taken care of. And there are no files in anyone's garage, or at least there shouldn't be. There was another question, Mr. Chairman, about the reason for the board and the primary reason for the board, which I know that the chairman could speak to, was to be able to bill insurance, to be able to work independently. That was the primary catalyst. And lastly, regarding the questions from the committee, this is the only licensing program, Mr. Chairman, that requires fingerprinting upon every renewal. Our other professions, handful of them, no pun intended, require fingerprinting, and they don't require fingerprints upon renewal, so it is a higher standard for a massage therapist.
Thank you, Ms. Chambers. Questions for Ms. Chambers? Representative Wool.
Thank you, Chair Keto. I guess following that last statement you just made, I guess if I was renewing every 2 years and had to, and I know it's not as simple as putting ink on your fingers and sending it in on a card. And you have to pay the board, and you probably have to pay the person taking the fingerprint. I don't know the procedure, the chain of control of the card and all that. I would question that the burden of that falling on board members, who are most likely probably law-abiding people, that they're paying the price for the illicit activity that's affiliated or associated with their profession. So, I'm glad that you answered the question that they're the only ones that have to do it so frequently. I mean, I guess, do you think that's fair, or that's not really for you to say? So,
well, through the chair, that was the determination that the legislature made when authorizing the board. So, that might be something outside of my realm.
Thank you. Any other questions from Ms. Chambers? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Chambers, and she will be available for questions. Next up, we have David Edward Smith, who's the current chair of the Massage Therapist Board. Mr. Edward Smith, if you can place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
Hi, my name is Dave Edward Smith, and I am the chair of the Alaska Board of Massage Therapists.
Thank you, and go ahead and provide your testimony.
Okay, I'll try to keep it brief. There's been a lot of exciting things happening since our first board meeting in January of 2015. And with the education, the guidance, and with the partnership of the division, we've accomplished a great deal, and one of which is this is our first sunset audit. And I believe it was very positive, and the board is in support of it. We are completing our transition from, as you pointed out earlier, we're going through the startup version of the board, and we're starting to move towards our board operations. I think, Mr. Chair, the question at hand is, do we continue the board to 2022? And I think another question is, you know, why do we even need a board? And I thought it would be interesting to talk about what the board, how important the board is with this program. And then once the program is understood and the questions become come to light, we'll see that the real question is, how can we not have a board of massage therapists? So I think it's important, Mr. Chair, for the committee to understand the diversity that's in with massage therapy profession. There are hundreds of techniques in the massage profession. We have expertise in spa-related relaxation. We'll see new age energy work, expertise in orthopedic and medically related techniques. And it does take a board of professionals with experience in this field and to be able to navigate this diversity, because we need to be able to put those techniques into context of the standards and practice and code of ethics that massage therapists are held to. And these standards ensure that the public, that there is a process in place in the event of a suspected violation. And the board also puts in context these standards into a variety of settings. The board, the massage therapists you'll find in settings such as chiropractic clinics, physical therapy clinics, spa settings, or even airports. And Mr. Chair, I feel the board gives this diverse program the agility to accommodate changes in the industry and of this emerging profession. And this is what I mean by emerging, is when you look at the sciences of cardiology, radiology, oncology, neurology, et cetera, you'll see there's a lot of funding, and there's a lot of there's funding and there's science with these practices that is well documented. But when you look at soft tissue and manual massage therapy, it's still an emerging science, and we can expect to see different education opportunities and career opportunities as the profession changes. So the board may be required to respond to changes in the industry in years to come. So, and finally, we've come to understand that the partnership has been invaluable between the division and the Board of Massage Therapists. And the two points to make is that we have reviewed 1,400 licenses. And there is a rough estimate that approximately 30% of those licenses had yes answers to professional fitness questions. And another point I'd like to make is during our tenure as the Massage Therapy Board, we have experienced 4 different licensing examiners. So we've had some bumps in the road. But as I said, we're completing our startup operations and we're moving to board operations. So we look forward to a strengthened program because of this audit, and we look forward to continuation to serving the public interest. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Edward Smith? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. The next person we have is Volker Ruby from the American Massage Therapy Association. Mr. Ruby, if you can place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Volker Ruby. I'm the president of the American Massage Therapy Association, Alaska chapter. I'm also a lifelong Alaskan, have been a massage therapist for 13 years, and have worked in the spa industry, medical massage, and private practice. We, the AMTA Alaska chapter, represent a large number of therapists in Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 275. In a recent legislative audit of the Board of Massage Therapists, it was pointed out that having a regulatory board for the massage industry in Alaska allows massage therapists to establish themselves as healthcare professionals, bill health insurance, create a legal way for the public to file a complaint, give voice to the public over the practice of massage therapy, and hold massage therapists accountable through licensure. Those reasons for establishing the board are exactly the same reasons why we believe that the board should be expanded. The board is composed of four actively practicing massage therapists and one general member of the public. The Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development's Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing provides administrative support for the board. As we understand it, if House Bill 275 does not pass and the board is not extended, the statutes and regulations pertaining to massage therapists will remain in place, and the duties performed by the board, which met 19 times between February 2015 and August 2017, will revert to the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. While the division does a good job of supporting this board and many others, we don't believe they possess the capacity or specific expertise that four massage therapists serving on the board bring to the table for oversight of our industry. As you know, this is a relatively new board, and we believe they have done an excellent job of enacting regulations to implement statutes in a short time period. Between July 2015 and 2017 of August, the board issued 1,186 new licenses, a number almost double the 600 licenses the division management expected. Have they been perfect? No. But personally, I know the members of this board, and I can promise you that working with the division, each of them is committed to improving any shortcomings outlined in the recent legislative audits. Mr. Chairman, thank you for bringing forward this important piece of legislation, and we urge the committee members to move this bill from committee. It is our firm belief that to fulfill the board's mission to provide public safety to massage consumers and to regulate the profession of massage therapy by setting and maintaining industry standards, the board of massage therapists must be extended. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Volker. Any questions for Mr. Ruby? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. And what we are going to do now is, before I do this, what I want to say is we are running up against the end of our meeting, and I'm going to have to actually postpone House Bill 180 until Friday. So anybody who's online or in the room waiting for that, apologize, and we just are running a little short on time. So what I'm going to do now on House Bill 275 is open up public testimony at 4:48 p.m., and we do have several people signed up for testimony. What I'm going to do is take them in the order in which they've been entered into our system. So the first one we have is at the Anchorage LIO, Kim Verade. Thank you. Ms. Verade, if you could put your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee. And my name is Kimberly Verite, and I am a co-owner of Advanced Body Solutions, Incorporated. And we've been in business for over 8 years. I have been a healthcare provider for almost over 30 years, a massage therapist for 30 years, a flight paramedic for at least 13 years. And I am in full support of that the massage therapy has a board. Functional regulation massage therapy is much safer than being unregulated, and basically all healthcare professionals should be regulated. That should be pretty much a no-brainer. And basically, I can say that I packed Mr. Volker all the way. He basically took away almost all of my talking points. Do you have any questions or concerns? Because I'm in favor of the board.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Verrett, and thank you for your testimony. Do you have any questions? Seeing none, we'll move on to Jane Gnas, also in Anchorage.
Hi, Chairman Keto, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. My name is Jane Gnas. I was born in Alaska before statehood, and I have been a licensed massage therapist here in Anchorage for 20 years in private practice as Body Wisdom, and I am currently both state and nationally board certified. I encourage the committee to extend the termination date for the Board of Massage Therapists. The Board of Massage Therapists, by way of the comprehensive licensing processes, including the FBI background check and requiring a high-level certified accredited training, ensures consistent and professional standards for our industry in both healthcare and spa-related services statewide, and it helps to weed out unqualified persons and illegal activities. The board has helped to elevate our profession, and I encourage the extension of this board. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Knotts. Any questions? Seeing no questions, we'll move on to the Matsu LIO, Jill Motz. Ms. Motz, if you can put your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jill Motz. I currently hold a position on both the state and Alaska American Massage Therapy Association boards. However, today I'm here to give testimony as a therapist and a business owner. I'm a fourth-generation Alaskan who's been practicing massage therapy since 2003. I live and work in Wasilla and have been an active participant in the massage community for most of my career. For about half of that career, I've worked for other medical professionals, chiropractors and physical therapists, oversaw my work, charged for my services, paid me a fraction of what they collected, and frankly, this is the standard for decades. If you wanted to work in medical massage, you worked for another provider. When licensing came to Alaska, I decided to return full-time to private practice, intending simply to exercise my new ability to oversee my own career. To my surprise, demand for high-quality, medically-oriented, insurance-covered massage therapy exploded. Within 7 months, I could not keep up with referrals and hired my first employee. 3 years later, I employed 5 people, all qualified, educated, licensed professionals, made entirely possible because of state licensing. I support House Bill 275 for many reasons, most of them already mentioned repeatedly this afternoon. However, this bill is also excellent for small businesses, communities, therapists, and most importantly, consumers. Access to qualified care is a huge benefit to our communities, and I urge you, for all of these reasons and more, to support House Bill 275.
Thank you, Ms. Motz. We do have a question from Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Motz, I just randomly picked you to ask, but do you find the fingerprinting requirement burdensome?
The fingerprinting requirement is something that we hear a lot about, both as AMTA board and the state board. Last year, we attempted to introduce House Bill 145, or I believe it was 145,
yes,
which changed that licensing requirement to once every 3 cycles. But it didn't move out of committee. So it has been, we have attempted to address it as a board, but we need to reintroduce that bill and try to move that forward again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Motz. Any other questions? Seeing no other questions, thank you for your testimony. Next we will go to OffNet, and we have Yale Hickok. Can you provide your name and affiliation and provide us with your testimony, please?
Hello. Yeah, my name is Yael Hickok, and I live in Chugiak. I'm just representing myself. I'm a massage therapist here in Alaska. I have been since about 1999. And I am asking this committee to vote no on HB 275, and I'm going to tell you why. The other testimonies that you've heard are kind of bunching up the board and licensing together. And I am for licensing, but against continuing the board. There's several reasons why. Licensing has been very helpful, primarily because of the ability to bill insurance and allowing massage therapists to be independent. And it is a reason why I supported licensing at first when it was talked about, because that was one reason why it was encouraged. The other was because it was going to help reduce crime and sex trafficking. We certainly haven't seen that benefit. We're paying ridiculous fees for our license. This licensing process was heavily pushed by the American Massage Therapy Association board, of which I happened to be a part of during that time. But we based a lot of our initiative on false information coming from a national organization that had its own agenda and mandate and did not provide that, and we did not have adequate information at the time. We're not seeing a return on our financial investment. We had to pay an initial fee of $610 just to be able to practice. On top of that, we had to pay for our fingerprinting, which, as you know, we have to repeatedly do, and that does not make sense. The board, I want the board to not continue, but I do want licensing to continue. Part of the reason is because there's been a lot of negative feelings with the board and massage therapists. There's been a lot of animosity there. I'm an administrator for a Facebook group called the Alaska Massage Therapist Network, and we have, right now, we have 549 members in that group, and we screen them to make sure they're Alaskan and they're massage therapists. Last week, I set up a survey, and I asked as many massage therapists as I could to answer the questions. And I noticed that the audit did not perform any kind of survey to massage therapists. It only dealt with the board itself. So I was curious to see what the feelings were about other massage therapists. I received 121 responses up for my survey as of this morning. One of the questions was, which of these positions best describes your opinion regarding continued state massage licensing? And the four choices were, I want the current state licensing to continue as it is. Second choice, I want state licensing to continue but prefer to eliminate the board, possibly reducing licensing fees. Third, I want to eliminate state licensing altogether. And fourth, I don't know. And out of those 121 responses I received, 44% said that they preferred to eliminate the board and continue licensing. 24% they wanted to continue licensing as it is. 14 said they want to eliminate licensing altogether, and 18% didn't know. So my opinion falls within the majority of the therapists in the state. I was careful not to state my opinion prior to sending out this survey and haven't shared it until now. According to the survey, many of the and responses on Facebook group, many massage therapists are really unhappy with the board. I know that they're new. I know that they're trying. We understand that, but there's been repeated complaints about the length of time it took to receive a license. I can concur with that. My initial license took about 6 months to get to me. Newly graduated massage therapists have sometimes to wait weeks or months before they can practice and make money on the career that they just spent so much money educating on. Even the legislative audit reported the issue with length of time and inconsistency with issuance of licenses. And the biggest issue has been communication with the board. It's been really problematic. Despite several times where I signed up to receive regular updates regarding board and activities, I have never received one email letting me know that there's a meeting coming up. The only way I know about it is if I check the state website or somebody says something about it on Facebook. The board has a responsibility to the licensees in the state to communicate and represent us. And even in the survey, I asked therapists what their opinion was about the board, and 49% said that they were unhappy with the board. The other 51 were split, with 29% saying that they didn't have opinion and 22 saying that they were satisfied. So I'm not against the idea of having a board at some future date. I think it's a possibility, but we need to involve massage therapists throughout the state a lot more in the creation of this board, instead of having it come down from a national organization. Scare tactics were also used to push the licensing, because we were told that the chiropractors were trying to license us under them, and if we didn't get our own board and license, we would then be licensed under chiropractors who control us in other ways and would control our income more. The idea that licensing could happen without a board was really not very well taught or shared. And I think because of the board, I've looked at their travel fees and meeting fees and all of that. It's exorbitant, and it's really leading to a very costly setup. right now just doing the licensing and my insurance and my state business license and my MAPSU business license, it cost me a month of wages just to be able to put my hands on somebody and practice, and I think this is inexcusable. I think it's time to end the board and just do licensing through the division, licensing through the division, and look at restarting a board at some future date. And clearly, I have the majority of massage therapists on my side with this as well.
Thank you, Ms. Hickok. Do we have any questions? I don't see any questions. We are at 5 o'clock, so what I am going to do is we will hold this bill over. I will leave public testimony open, and I anticipate that we, or at least we hope to be able to get back to all of these sunset extension bills that we've heard today coming up on Friday. So thank you all for your patience and attention. With that, House Labor and Commerce for Monday, January 22nd, is adjourned at 5:01 p.m. Thank you.